Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. I'm your host today, Doogie Critchlow. I'm joined by Patrick Van Straten and George Wright because, yes, you guessed it, it is that time of year. It is time for the Arsenal podcast on Extra Time. I'm pretty excited about this as a neutral, but I'm not sure how these guys are feeling. I mean, George, a little bit of a challenging start to the season. How are you? Before we get into it, how are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Feel a bit tired, but, you know, and Virgin Net were on a mad one this morning, so, you know, not the best starts, but we move, as Sam Obseki would say.
Nice. Keeping you on your toes. Pat, how are you feeling? Did you enjoy the Champions League last night? Something that Arsenal haven't been in for a few years?
Good one. yeah, like, I didn't really watch it. I tuned into the goal show and I looked at all the games and I was like, this is maybe the worst lineup of Champions League games I've ever seen. and I turned it off again.
You weren't tempted by Barcelona-Bayern?
No, like, it's, have you watched Barcelona recently? like we might as well play Bayern.
Yeah, the gulf was absolutely enormous, as it has been between Arsenal and the top four as it stands.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, no, they're already 7 points behind the top four. Oh, they're also 7 points behind Man United at the top of the table. So we wanted to talk about where Arsenal are, where they're going, etc. It's not a how to fix so much because obviously the transfer window only finished last month and Arsenal made a pretty big effort to try and fix themselves as it was. They spent £121 million net spend. Ben White, Odegaard, Ramsdale, Tomiyasu, Lokonga, Nuno Tavares. So basically, I just wanted to ask you guys today, where do you think you are at the start of the season? George, let's kick off with you because the fixtures haven't been particularly kind to you.
Yeah. I mean, the opening, there's a reason why Brentford Arsenal was the first game of the season on a Friday night, because they knew what was going to happen. new stadium, massive crowd. There was like the whole COVID thing, like apparently it was minutes away from being cancelled, whatever. But obviously the Premier League could never allow that to happen on the opening day of the season. So they said, you know what, just play Balogun up front, who was never played senior football. And he got chucked around like he was on a clothesline in the wind. But there's no excuses not to win that game, really. And after that, you just knew we weren't going to beat Chelsea or Man City, who were probably be trying to win a treble this season, to be honest. So apart from that, you know, Norwich at home after that was pretty all right, but it was a rough start and there's no excuses for it, even despite not really having a full squad or ready, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But I don't know, it was hard to watch, especially when you go into the first home game of season paying £90 to see Lukaku chuck Pablo Mari about as well.
That was a little bit troubling, I think. You make a very good point that you haven't had your sort of big players available really so far. I mean, Ben White's only played two games, Odegaard's played two, Gabriel's played one, Tomiyasu, obviously new signings, only played 62 minutes, Partey's only been fit to play 28 minutes. But Pat, did the manner of those defeats against Chelsea and Man City particularly sort of worry you about where Arsenal are going, or do you think they're more down to sort of situations?
I don't think those really worry me about where Arsenal are going, because realistically, like, I kind of wrote those games off before they started. Mm. Like, I mean, I know what you're saying about the manner of them. The City one is a bit of a tough one. Because the City one, obviously, there's a red card. There's also, weirdly, that choke slam that was allowed, which I was just like, look, you know, like, not even just like being an Arsenal fan, like, come on, you can't just slap someone in the face during a game. It's not acceptable behavior.
It's not like it would have changed the result, but it was like, come on, like,
exactly.
Even in the Brentford game, like when Leno was held for the second goal, like, Leno's got to be a bit stronger, but that is just, it's just not a goal. Like, it's just not allowed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like you could definitely have some criticism. Like, obviously, in that situation, like, Leno's job is to, like, suplex the defender out of the way and, like, make it clear that something's happening. But, yeah, like, it's stuff like that is a little bit annoying. I'd say the Chelsea one, actually, was particularly frustrating because I didn't think Chelsea were that good in the game. Like, I really didn't.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that some of their attackers were good. But when I looked at their defence, I thought that there was, like, quite a lot of space to be exploited. I thought people said Reece James had a great game and he didn't attack, but he was out of position pretty much the entire match in defence and probably should have given away a penalty. There were lots of times where the ball would go into like Smith Rowe and he was able to turn in the open field and run. And I thought this is actually something that Chelsea, you didn't see this amount of space from them from last season. So I don't necessarily mind when we lose to, like, you know, Liverpool or City, and they're just on another planet to us. What I mind is when there is an opportunity to exploit teams and we literally look like we have no idea how to do it. That to me is a fault of coaching, like, because it's not like Chelsea are going to go through the season unbeaten. Like, they'll lose some games, and often in those matches you just think, okay, there's something to be exploited here, there's something that we can get at, and it just seems like we don't really have a way of doing it. And also, I guess because there was such a problem with, like, you know, Tierney on the left-hand side, and Tierney was getting a lot of flack for leaving all this space, but he was trying to cover Mount, and then Reece James was there, and I was like, look, if a player is out of position two or three times, that's on the player. If a player is out of position for the entire match, that's probably on the manager.
Yeah, he wasn't getting any help whatsoever.
Exactly.
Down that left-hand side.
And so, like, that was a frustrating one. As for the Brentford game, I sort of don't mind it. Like, the Brentford game, I thought, was actually a pretty even match. Like, people were talking afterwards like we were absolutely battered, and I certainly didn't think we were the better side, but I didn't think we were that much worse. Like, I mean, they took advantage of their moments. The second goal probably shouldn't have stood. We didn't really create anything. But, like, what I will say as well about that and about the Norwich match is we had shots, and they weren't particularly good shots in the Brentford game, but we had, I think, 22 shots against Brentford with a very young team. We had 30 shots against Norwich. Well, last season, when we had these bad matches, we didn't even get shots, at all. Like, we would come out of these games with, like, 10 shots.
And, under Emery before that as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so, look, is it great? No, but there is something there that you might be able to pin your hopes on if you want to.
When I was at the Norwich game as well, and there were so many chances created, and I'd rather have a scrappy 1-0 win where we're not convincing, as long as we're creating loads of chances. Like, it could, if Aubameyang was on his form from 2 years ago, we could have easily scored two or three. Pepe had some chances. Saka probably had a pretty poor game, to be honest. He's not started the season well, but the thing with the Chelsea game was, I actually didn't mind the Chelsea game as much, because I saw at least there was, like, some sort of effort, that, like, there was, like, some sort of, like, I don't know, just even though the Brighton was on the wall, really, that we were going to lose, at least there was, like, some sort of effort in the midfield and on the wings, chasing back, whatever. The Man City game was, I was just in the pub and I was just like, this is when there's literally zero chance we're going to win this game. And we actually started off the best I've seen us start off against City.
Yeah, first, like, 8-10 minutes.
Yeah,
is pretty good.
We were pretty good. And then first goal happens, then you know what's going to happen. It's the fan, and we're going to do something stupid. A certain player is going to do something very stupid. And then after that, it was just abysmal. Like, there was just, we knew what was going to happen. It was like, can we just go home, please? Can the ref just end this as soon as possible?
It was the same in the Chelsea game. I thought you started pretty well for the first 10-15 minutes. And I was like, oh, Arsenal look, you know, like they can match these guys for the opening half. And then it just slowly slipped away. And obviously, Pablo Mari got pretty much bullied by Lukaku. And the player quality eventually told. I mean, it wasn't your first choice defence. George, you mentioned there Nicola Pepe. And over the last few days, I've seen a lot of debate on Twitter about where he's at, etc. I personally am still a quite big fan of Nicola Pepe, but what do you make of Nicola Pepe, and what do you think are his chances this season of having another good year? Because last year was much improved.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Pepe is, in and around the box, he's great. He's a good finisher. He's got a nice clip ball in, but it's just everything apart from that is so frustrating to watch. Like, he's definitely improved under Mikel, like, in terms of his ethic and work rate, because when he first arrived, he was not doing any running whatsoever. Now he's like a madman when he loses the ball. But there was, we released like a bench cam video after Norwich game, and there was one with Ben White. It was like a typical, like, Laporte to Mahrez ball, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Where, you know, as soon as it clipped over to him, like, switched to play, you know he's going to control it first time perfectly and drive into the box. Pepe, he receives it, he takes a bad first touch, he takes about 4 seconds to get out his feet, and by the time that happens, all the Norwich players are in the box, ready to defend. And Mikel was frustrated at that. I was probably about five rows behind him, frustrated at it as well. And it's just them little things where I don't think he's ever going to be a full package, and I don't think you can rely on someone like that for the whole season in the type of football we're going to play. So for me, like, I think he's a good footballer, obviously, because he's, you know, he scored 16 goals last season.
Mm.
But I just don't, I don't think I'd start him every week. I don't see how, I'd much rather have Aubameyang up front with Smith Rowe, Odegaard and Saka behind him. Because you just know they're more technically secure, and they might not take risks and have like a enigmatic moment like Pepe is, where, you know, you can just cut inside, you have one moment magic, cut inside and put it top bins. But at least you know they're going to be more consistent in their game. There's going to be less technical flaws throughout the match. And I don't know, it's hard with Pepe because I can genuinely see a future where he's probably sold in the summer. But it's up to him. Like, he's got chances like that against Norwich. He saw he got an assist, but it was a bit fluky, wasn't it? I mean, he did like a roly-poly and it tapped across to Aubameyang.
But he did have the good initial shot, to be fair.
Yeah, like that's the thing with Pepe. When he's in the box, he's great. It's just outside it and he's a good dribbler as well, but taking his man on one-on-one sometimes really painful because sometimes you stand still and wait for the play to stop and like slows us down. Mm. And it's just, he's a frustrating player. Like, you know, Alexis Sanchez was a really frustrating player to watch in that regard, but obviously Alexis Sanchez was like a world-class footballer, whereas Pepe doesn't really have that luxury, I don't think.
Fair. Interesting. I actually really like Nicola Pepe, but I can see that at times, like, his work rate off the ball, and as you say, he does slow down play. I think it's a good observation as well. Okay, guys, we've sort of set the scene. We've got a few things off our chest. We've basically, you know, outlined that Arsenal, results-wise, you're probably 3 points behind where you'd expect to be at this stage of the season. It's not really a total disaster. But Pat, I want to know, what is your biggest problem with this current side? Maybe name a few.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think a problem last season was that we weren't pressing. I really want to see that develop. I think that was a serious problem. I think when you have a lack of creativity in your side, one of the ways you can get around it, and I think Southampton have been a great example of this under Hasenhüttl, is you can press really high and create transition opportunities. And for a guy like Pepe, especially, that would be a really good way to get the most out of him. But we weren't really doing that last season, and our defenders aren't good enough to sit in a deep block. So I just kind of felt like we were caught in between two things. Like, there's this attitude of, we are Arsenal, we're a big club, therefore we should have lots of possession and push up the field, but also we're not really capable of doing that. And it just felt like nothing was quite hanging together. The other thing that I've been thinking about recently, and maybe Tomiyasu and the return of Partey will help with this, but I think we've spent a lot of money this summer to kind of get physically weaker. I don't really like that. Like I like Ben White. I like a lot about him. He's a really good passer. He had some great moments against Norwich, and he's quick. But when he's playing in a back four, and when Lokonga's in midfield, as much as I think Lokonga looks promising, we are weak. Like, we are just physically weak through the middle. We just get bullied. And that is a little bit of a problem. Like, there are enough players around in the world now that you can find somebody who can contribute for you at centre-back who is also a physical specimen. Like, for instance, William Saliba.
Mm.
Like, you can find a central midfielder who is a promising passer who is also going to be capable of competing physically at the highest level. And, like, yes, Lokonga is young and he may well develop into that, and Ben White will continue to get stronger as well. But I always feel with Arsenal like there's something missing from us. Like for a long time with Wenger, we didn't really have much pace if Walcott wasn't playing or the Ox was injured. Like, then there was a period where, like, obviously here we didn't have much creativity, and then other times, you know, like, we don't really have any strength, and it just feels like there's always some quite major element missing. I guess those are a couple of things. Like, otherwise, like, there are lots of reasons to feel more positive about Arsenal this season than I did last season. I feel more positive about the squad, certainly. Mm. But it's almost an unmanageably large question, Deeks. Like, yeah. There are so many things that I'm just not really sure about. And the fact that we, I think, still get fixated as well on particular players and then go and overpay for them, I think is weird. Like, we went and, like, paid $52 million for Ben White this summer. Like, just because he was the guy we wanted. The same happened with Pepe. The same happened with Partey. And of those, you know, Partey is the only one who doesn't really have a notable weakness. And Partey is
Well, maybe his injuries, but
he's a little bit old. Well, yeah, but he didn't have those when we signed him.
True.
and I look at the fact that like someone like Andre Frank Zombo-Anguissa went to Napoli this summer with I think a 15 million euro option to buy on loan. Like, you're telling me that that wouldn't have been worth doing? That's like zero risk. Like, there are just things like this where I think there are edges to be found, and I look at our transfer business and I like it. But we aren't finding those edges at all.
Well, I think, you know, having watched Upamecano absolutely dominate Barcelona last night, admittedly, Luke de Jong and Memphis Depay. Memphis Depay wasn't really paying off him, but yeah, Luke de Jong. I mean, he was signed for, what, £34 million? And obviously, you can't compare that business with Ben White, but there are better deals or cheaper deals and better players available than Ben White for that price. I do, like you, you know, appreciate Ben White's qualities, but I'm kind of with you. I think, As a direct comparison to David Luiz, who he's probably long-term replacing, having been released by the club, he's got very different physical attributes. I mean, George, I'm going to ask you the same question. A lot of people would be focusing in the sort of striker department as the next area that needs to be fixed with Arsenal. Would that be the sort of biggest problem for you, or is there something else?
I think next season, like, obviously there was a clear strategy this summer to, like, well, because our squad, since when Arteta took over, was abysmal in every regard, really, wasn't it? Like, it was imbalanced. All the age profiles are wrong. Everyone was massively overpaid. And now, at least, there's, like, a clear plan of, like, it's quite a young core we've got now. Like, the average age of the team against Norwich was 23 and a half.
Wow.
And so, you'd imagine next summer, it depends on where we finish, really, because you'd expect us to sign a striker, because obviously Lacazette's out of contract. There's no chance he's going to get a contract now. Balogun is still clearly needs more senior football, as his game against Brentford was his first ever senior appearance. Brentford or Blackpool, anyway. but next year, I'd imagine we'd probably go after a striker who's just a bit older than the profile we targeted this summer.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea who it's going to be, to be honest. But you'd imagine they'd probably be around 24 to 26. So that the next, a bit older generation than the players we bought this year, just to kind of balance the squad in terms of age. Because I love the old Football Manager tactic of bringing in everyone under the age of 23 and selling someone who's going to hit 30. But in the real world, there's got to be some sort of senior experience in the side. But I have no idea who that can be, really. Like, I think the Lautaro Martinez talk was a bit weird, because I don't see any reason why he would currently leave Inter Milan. I know they got stripped of all their good players, but if he's going to be the talisman and get paid a healthy amount to stay in Italy, I reckon he would have done that anyway until someone like Barcelona or Real Madrid came calling. He definitely wouldn't go to us or Spurs, I don't think. But I have no idea who we're going to target. There's always been links with Alexander Isak, but he just signed a new contract and his release clause is like, what, 90 million euros now?
Yeah, it's huge.
I can't see us paying that. I literally have no idea who we can target. Absolutely zero clue. There's no one in the Premier League that I think we would target either. Like, you give me some names, dude. You've been writing scout report stuff.
I'm trying to think, really. I mean, Alexander Isak makes sense in terms of the age profile, but I think 90 million euros is just absolutely enormous for a player of his quality at the moment. Not because he's not going to be a great player, but I think it was 17 league goals last year. I mean, that's really impressive for Real Sociedad, but went through a massive purple patch in the middle of that and then didn't really score that many either side. Struggled in the Europa League with Real Sociedad as well. So I definitely give him a year or two before you're spending 90 million euros on him. I think that's just enormous. The player that always springs to mind for the likes of Spurs and Arsenal that are gettable in the Premier League is Dominic Calvert-Lewin, but he plays in such a different style to what you guys are trying to do, and I don't see you guys being a cross-heavy side.
I actually think he probably might be one of the ideal targets.
Yeah.
But I just can't see it happening. I think Everton have no reason to sell after they've gone through this window without selling him, despite they've had about 10p to buy players in the window due to FFP. I can't see him letting him go next summer. I think, to be fair, Rafa's a great manager anyway, and he'll probably be hoping if they manage to sneak a European place, I reckon he'd stick around. And to be fair, he'd probably cost more than Isak would. But I reckon if Edu and Arteta could get a target that they'd want, it'd probably be Calvert-Lewin, just because he's not the best link-up player, I don't think, but in the air he's monstrous, and the physical attributes go a long way, and it's something that we're missing in this squad, because if there's one thing that's happened, apart from like Ben White, the target and the Conk obviously, but he's still quite young, everyone we've brought in the last two seasons is quite more dominant. Like Gabriel is a physical monster. Yeah. Partey is huge. Tomiyasu in the flesh is an unreal athlete, by the way. He's massive.
He seemed to go down so well at the weekend.
Yeah, I thought he was great.
Yeah, he's good. He's a really good footballer. Both feet as well. I saw like he's more ambipedal than like his actions are more ambipedal than Santi Cazorla was in terms of his left and right foot.
Really?
He's got a great leap on him. He's a good athlete. And down the right hand side, if you surround Ben White with him and Gabriel either side, you're a lot more assured. And Ramsdale, I think, as well, he's like, obviously, when the rumours started flying about, I absolutely, like, Jesus, please do not sign Aaron Ramsdale. I've never rated him. But he's become like a cult hero already. Everyone loves him. He's unreal. Like, when I was at the stadium, everyone was chanting his name every 2 minutes. My mate next to me was like, just as soon as he made like a basic save, he's like, that's his safe hands. He's a number one. His like personality and the way he deals with everything is like what we've been missing in the goalkeeper. Because I think Leno's a really good goalkeeper, great shot stopper, but he just doesn't have that
commanding sir.
Bravado about him, that little bit of like eccentricity that you need to be like a top level goalkeeper makes a difference. And I think Ramsdale, with his assertion, shall we say, and his bravado, makes up for that. But I think we are transitioning to become more physical side. It's just there's certain elements at the minute where you can look with our young attacking like quartet with Ødegaard, Smith Rowe and Saka. Saka's quite physical already. He's one of the strongest players I've seen for ages on the ball. But with Smith Rowe and Ødegaard, they're still a bit lightweight, but you'd expect that at their ages, to be honest. And Aubameyang obviously is not providing any physical threat whatsoever. But I don't know what the original question was about strikers, but yeah, Calvert-Lewin, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
I mean, the other name that's always linked with big clubs at the moment is Dusan Vlahovic as well. And I was hoping that he'd have a sort of quieter year this year, slightly out of the limelight, you know, 10 to 15 league goals, and then he'd be more achievable for a club like Arsenal as well. But he started really well.
There was big links and I wasn't sure of him. I had this feeling of Piontek. I just had this this inner feeling of Piontek where he scores loads of penalties. And I just didn't know much about him, to be honest. So I was like, if we drop 50 million on this guy and he is just Piontek, we're screwed because we can't sell him on like Milan did.
Yeah.
We have no chance of selling anyone on for decent money.
He'd only scored something like 6 goals in 40 Serie A games before December last year and then just went on this crazy run towards the back end of last year. And to be fair, it started well at Fiorentina.
Yeah, he is young. So
very young. So we'll see what happens
We'll see what happens, yeah.
Okay, we've done biggest problem at Arsenal. Pat, you know, I don't just want this to be a miserable therapy session. What do you love most about this current Arsenal side?
I really love a lot of the players.
Nice.
Like I really do.
The KT at the back?
Yeah, but I don't, you know, I really like Gabriel. Like, I already like Tomiyasu. I don't know how you look past the Hale End kids. Like, that is, to me, I never really knew I cared because, like, I'm not from North London. Like, I never knew that I would really, like, care so much about, like, you know, like the kids playing for Arsenal. But I really, really do. I'm really invested. Like, you know, Bukayo Saka, like, he's from Ealing. Like, it makes me happy. Like, I don't know. Like, they're great players. They seem like good kids. Like, they're clearly smart kids, especially Saka, I think.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I can imagine them playing under Wenger, you know? when I look at Saka and I look at Smith Rowe, like, it is like, you know, the meme of, like, you know, you're looking up to the heavens and there's like there's like Wenger
on
a cloud.
You're doing a great job, son.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel. Like, I just look at those guys and I think this is actually like Arsene's legacy. Like, you know, obviously, like, there are a lot of facets to his legacy, but this is what he did. Like, he gave us like a way of building young players, of turning young players into stars, and not just stars, but I think like impressive young people. And that's something that really makes me happy. And it's the same way that, like, I will like fight people over Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Like, I love Ainsley Maitland-Niles, and I always have, and I still think there's like a really good player in there. So yeah, I don't know, that makes me happy. It really does. Yeah. And even like, not just the hair, but like Martinelli makes me excited. Martinelli has something special. Like, I know that whenever he plays, like, I know that, like, Joe, like, likes to go in the Football Daily, like, WhatsApp and start, like, talking shit, be like, oh, this bloke's made of paper. Like, he's nowhere near as good as Greenwood. Whoa. But, like, Martinelli does have that X factor. Yeah. When you watch him, people are scared of Martinelli, and he has the intensity that you only see in, I think, really elite players. So if he can stay fit, he is someone who I think, maybe the best case for Arsenal, you know, when it comes to a striker, is Martinelli turns into a superstar. But I think he's a winger for probably the next few years.
Yeah, like with Martinelli, like, it's kind of like the way, do you remember when Barcelona, like, Puyol and Pico talking about they did not want to face Theo Walcott? Do you know what I mean? It's like that sort of like intense, like, you don't know what you're going to get, really. Because, like, in terms of him, he's nowhere near the finished article by any means.
Cause
he's still quite tunnel visioned when he's on the ball. You know, he wants to do one thing, and it's just drive. And sometimes that's not the best option. Like, there was an opportunity in a Brentford game where he could have released it and played Balogun through, but instead he tried driving. But I feel like he's been managed quite well since his injury. I felt like there was a lot of unfair criticism on Arteta about him, because the last thing you want to do to someone like Martinelli, who's come off what, an 8-month knee injury, is rushing back. Do you know what I mean?
Especially the way he plays.
Yeah, and I have to agree, like, the Hayland kids, like, Hayland is just 10 minutes down from mum and dad's house, so obviously I have like an affinity towards that, and seeing Saka blossom the way he has is remarkable. Like, when he was playing for England, it was just like, I can't believe this kid has come from basically, it's not, no one in football's heard of him 2 years ago, to being in the Euro final. It was just like, well, it was just like a really like nice moment to have, especially when he's like the only shining light in Arsenal in the last 2 years, apart from the FA Cup win, obviously. But and then you look at Smith Rowe and his development. Like, Phil Smith Rowe he was always meant to be like a superstar. Like, he was always meant to be really highly rated. Mm-hmm. And when he started getting injuries a lot, you just thought, is this just going to go down the path of him on loan at Huddersfield? Is this going to be his level? But obviously, Danny Cowley did a great job with him. And there's the thing is, the Howland kids, is there's a lot more to come. Like, you probably haven't heard of him, like Charlie Patino.
The guy everyone's raving about on Twitter.
He's, yeah, like, scouts.
So yeah, he's probably a special kid.
I saw some highlights of him. He looked incredible.
He looks like Jack Wilshere, is what he looks like.
The scouts say he's like the best ever talent to come from Howland.
Jesus.
That's some burden on his shoulders. But,
and there's like Amari as well, isn't there? And like Killer Taylor Hart and like all those guys. And what's the kid? Mika Biret, like the new striker.
Yeah, we
nicked
from Fulham. Yeah.
And what's the big striker called? I think we loaned
Moller.
Him out this season.
Moller. Nicolas Moller.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an absolute monster. he's so big. But like whenever Saka's on the... Whenever I see Saka in a context that's not an Arsenal game, and even sometimes Arsenal games, I'm like, you know, like Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at himself on the screen. That's what I'm like every time. I'm like, oh, it's him. Like, and every time I like nudge my wife and I'm like, he's from Ealing. And she's like, yeah, I know. Like,
how can you not love him?
Like, yeah, he's great.
He's just great. Like, he hasn't been in his best form this season at all, but once he gets going, he's just such a joy to watch. Like, really, like, I can't wait to see what, like, him, Smith Rowe and Ødegaard do together, because that is, like, behind a striker, that is such a good trio to have, honestly.
Yeah. I think one thing I've noticed about Saka this season, except for that quite a key role in that goal against Norwich when he, like, sort of rolls Grant Hanley after getting sort of knocked to the ground, was like his shots seemed to have got quicker as well. Like his backlift seems a lot less as well. And he took a really good effort. I think it was against Man City. Maybe Chelsea from outside the box on very little backlift, and it had a hell of a lot of power. And I was like, oh, Saka.
Yeah.
He's been working on that.
That's the thing with like him and Smith Rowe and Odegaard, they need to develop this like goal threat.
Mm.
But that's the next stage for them, because we already know like Smith Rowe is a great dribbler. Like he's like almost like a Sami Nasri in this system. Like he's great on the ball, he's good at driving.
I miss Nasri.
Yeah, he was great. I know he's a knob, but he's great. and Saka is... Because if the creative burden is not all on them at one time, they have to offer something else. Like, they need to be in getting into these positions where they're able to get in a rebound, like Aubameyang is always lurking. They need to, like, be making runs into the box, and that's the next stage for them. If they manage to do that and they hit, 10 gold contributions together, then each... then that's a good step for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that'd be massive, because you haven't hit 60 goals in the last two seasons, I was seeing the other day. Emery, yeah. I think under Emery, you scored over 70, but your defence was so much worse. So it's just... Yeah.
It's chaos.
It's really difficult to know. because I was going to put out some obnoxious tweet about being, maybe you're better under Emery, but I just really don't think you were at all. Anyway, on to the topic of managers. This brings us quite nicely to the kind of big, what could be a debate. I'm not even sure what you guys are going to answer. I expect you're going to answer the same thing, but I'll see. Pat, Arteta, does he need to be sacked? Are there any conditions in the next couple of months that he needs to be sacked, or are you just fully behind backing him?
I'm not really in either camp. Like, I mean, I'm perfectly fine with sacking him if things don't improve. Like, and when I say things improve, I don't even really mean results, because I don't think results matter that much. We're not going to get relegated. We're not going to make the Champions League. Like, it'd be good to make the Europa. Probably need to. But I don't know. Like, what I need to see now are signs that this team, which he's built, and he has built it. He's now got a full 11 of players he either signed or extended. That it is, you know, like heading in the right direction, that there's a style of play developing, that we can actually like impose that style on teams other than, you know, the sides that are going to finish 19th and 20th in the Prem. Like, if we can do that consistently, then I don't mind taking the occasional beating, and I don't mind missing out on Champions League, because I can see where we're going. But it also depends who's available, you know. Like, I mean, I don't know why people have said that, like, we couldn't get Conte if we wanted to. I think we definitely could.
He definitely could.
He went to Chelsea when they finished 10th. He would come to Arsenal. We could pay his salary. He'd come to Arsenal. And if we have another really bad season, I'd be quite tempted to do that. Because I do think it would just make you... It would be 2 years that would end in carnage. But we've got enough young players in the squad that I think we're to some degree future-proofed, even if he demanded that we bring in like 40-year-old Italian guys. and I do think we'd be taken seriously. Like, you'd be taken seriously under Conte. Like, you'd be a serious club again. You'd be a danger to everyone you played. Or failing that, I think the obvious candidate other than that is someone like Graham Potter. Like, obviously, maybe Jesse Marsh, you know, really leaps up in Germany. But I think Graham Potter would be a really interesting signing for Arsenal. And he's probably the guy who you'd look at and think, yeah, this, like, long term, this guy plays the way we want. He can maximize pretty bad attacking talent, to be honest with you. He's just everything that you want in a coach, I think. So I wouldn't sack Arteta just now. I think... the start to the season, like, why would you sack him on the basis of that? There's only one result in there that's really bad. Like, if you're going to sack, like, but if we are like doing badly at Christmas and we're not playing well, more importantly, I'd happily sack him and say, right, okay, we're going to get one of those two guys in.
Because this is the thing, George. I mean, your next four games, you've got Burnley away, Spurs home, Brighton away, Palace home. Now, that could be like really quite exceptional, because no one really ever knows what's going to happen in the North London Derby. You could easily win at home there, especially with the way Spurs are playing at the moment. But it could end quite tragically. Brighton are a good side at the moment. Palace look, you know, buoyed by recent signings. I mean, do you think it really depends on what happens in the next month or two, or are you firmly behind, you know, we'll keep Arteta to the end of the year?
I think it's hard, because obviously we don't know how these games are going to pan out, because it's very much Jekyll and Hyde at the minute. So I said after that City game, I think you have to win at least four or five of the next six. I think Spurs are completely beatable. I don't rate them whatsoever. This is the first time in ages I felt so confident that we're going to finish above them. I know it's going to come back to bite me in the arse, obviously, because it always does. And I've already got a £50 bet with Sonny. My dad's bet £100 with my uncle.
Love it.
But the thing is with Arteta is, like, I remember doing the podcast ages ago before COVID when we was talking about start of season. I think it's after the Europa League thrashing. And we said, me and Pat said we wanted Arteta in when Unai came in. And we probably wanted Conte as well at some point during that podcast. And I think the weird thing is, despite the squad looking better now, when Unai took over, we were in a much better win now position, which Conte, I think, would have suited really well. And I think he definitely would have got a Champions League football that season. But now we're at a position where I don't know if Conte, is he the right fit for this young squad? I don't know. I don't know his record on developing young players. All I know is that he signed Ashley Young. Obviously, he's like a world-class manager, probably like top five in the world. And obviously, you do a lot better than probably Mikel Arteta is doing. But do I think he's the fit now? No. Maybe in two or three years' time when these players are starting to develop and if he's still available and Mikel's run his course, if he survives that long, maybe he'll come in. But I think the whole sacking a manager after three games is a bit bizarre, to be honest. Yeah. Like, it's just... Like, there was a good article on, like, online fan culture, and it just stems from that, really. There's, like, a sense of, like, entitlement that we have to win every game. And I know it's been embarrassing, but, you know, he's not a miracle worker. There was literally no chance he'll beat in Chelsea or Man City. And we said in the pod, I think we did a podcast when he came in last year, Pato, or I don't know when it was. And we said, I remember saying, like, we still haven't seen what his squad meant, what his setup is yet. Like, I mentioned Emil Smith Rowe, we'll see that. I said it would be in Europa League, or we start to see it. And in the end, I guess that kind of came true after Christmas. On the Chelsea game when Smith Rowe started, and we had the number 10 for the first time since Ozil, who's probably not even good enough for a top Turkish team, really. And after that, I know it is genuinely hilarious because we weren't good whatsoever, but finishing third after Christmas in the post-Christmas table is generally one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. But I feel like now he's got his squad that he's assembled, and there's clear players who are his, like Ben White, Ødegaard, Tomiyasu, Partey. It'd be so stupid to sack him straight away. It would make no sense. Definitely. So if we're still performing poorly by Christmas or the second national break, then you've got to start to realise that, right, maybe we do need change because this is going to go downhill very quickly. But the one thing I say is I think he's the luckiest and unluckiest manager at the same time. I don't know how that's possible. But everything that's been thrown at him since he's joined has been mental. Like, COVID happened. He got COVID. Half the players, five players have been ruled out of COVID in the opening day of the season. Injuries been mental. We've had the worst squad assembled I've ever seen. We had overpaid players who weren't even registered because we couldn't shift them on, like Ozil, Mustafi, Sokratis, who were all on like over £100,000 a week. And we tried to sell Mustafi every window since he's brought in, but we couldn't. But at the same time, I've never seen a manager with that record before Christmas and still had a job. Like, that was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. But I guess the only way you do that is if you keep the dressing room, and somehow he's got the whole dressing room behind him. Maybe it's like the Pochettino effect, where he builds like some sort of like cult mentality amongst younger players and they're fully bought into their system. But it's time for to bear the fruit of the project now. And if we don't start reaching the upper echelons of like fifth or sixth now, then his job's under severe threat. Because I've always been a bit biased to Mikel because I loved him as a player. I thought he was a great captain for Arsenal, and he's a great speaker, and he represents the club well after Unai Emery, where I felt like the arson was being sucked out of the club. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was not lost much going on like around the training ground, like from what I heard. People like it wasn't really like a family club anymore, and he's kind of brought that, Mikel has brought that back apparently. But you know, it's a results business at the end of the day. Like, we need to finish like at least competing for fifth and sixth, and if he doesn't, then I'm guessing his job's on the line, because he only have a year left on his contract after the end of season ends. So yeah, either he pulls it around and we go on a good run playing well, and he probably gets a contract extension around December, or it looks like he might be on a chopping block. And at the end of the last season, I don't think he could complain if he got the sack. But here he is, and it's time to put the money where his mouth is, really. Like, he's got everything he wanted, got a good squad. There's no reason why we shouldn't be finishing near fifth or sixth, or even in fifth or sixth, really, in my opinion.
Oh, there we have it. I mean, I'd be very, very surprised if he finished lower than eighth. I just think there's a few teams that are at a similar sort of level. I mean, Leicester at the start of the season don't look great. I think they'll be better when they get their full defence back. Yeah. You know, Leeds have started really poorly, but I think they'll be in that bracket as well. West Ham, Spurs, they're the sort of sides that I see you guys competing with. And you could easily finish eighth, and I don't think it'd be a total disaster. But as Pat says, if there's some sort of style of play developing, if these young players are coming through...
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
What I would say is, if you did sack him, which I don't think you should do as a neutral, like, whoever takes that on that squad, it's in a much better place, as you say.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to get excited about. The players are on sensible wages, as you say as well. It seems like a happier dressing room. Like, I think someone like a Ten Hag, a Brendan Rodgers, a Graham Potter, I think the first two are probably quite ambitious, but Graham Potter, why couldn't you get Graham Potter?
Yeah.
And
If Arteta was to be sacked, like, I feel like we need to continue down this like young
Absolutely.
Manager route, like, because we're not ready for the cherry on top of the cake yet. I don't think we're still not there. Yeah. I don't think.
I'm also skeptical. You guys were talking about it earlier. I'm very skeptical that Antonio Conte would go to Arsenal, not because you're not the right caliber of club, because Inter Milan weren't in a great position before he arrived there. But just because I think he'll have better offers this year, to be honest. I think,
if Man United is on the card.
Exactly. Like, Oli is going to be under pressure at certain stages. We don't really know what's going to happen with Ronald Koeman. I mean, he'd probably unlikely to go to Barcelona, but...
Antonio Conte at Barcelona would be crazy.
That'd
yeah.
be amazing.
But, like, they're already going towards that. They look so different from the Barcelona way already. You might as well go full hot.
Can you imagine him on a training ground seeing Luke de Jong and being just be like, nah. Just like, go away.
But you also have a certain, your squad does actually fit five of the back quite well, particularly now you've got Tomiyasu in.
The thing is, like, I feel like next season is going to be probably the best squad we have in a while, because I still, your whole William Saliba thing, right, I don't think is as bad as what people are making out, because I don't think football works in the way, like, people think it's like an anime where, like, there's like some sort of revenge story, like he's gone low and now he wants to kill Arteta or something like that. I just think he's just a professional, like, he will come back. I think he's the perfect third choice defender, because I've got concerns about Gabriel, because apparently he has jumper's knee, which is like chronic and not going away. But I don't think Arteta is actually wedded to a left foot on the left hand side. I just think it makes more sense at the minute. But if you've got Saliba who's comfortable playing either side, you've got Tomiyasu who's comfortable playing either side, I think the centre-back trio next season should be White, Gabriel and Saliba, like, rotating, depending on who's fit, really. But, and I don't know, I'm actually looking forward to Arsenal Wilshire's next few years. I don't think we're going to be successful. I don't think we're going to get in the Champions League, but I just want to see, like, in the stadium, like, it was so nice seeing everyone get behind a team for the whole game. In both games I've been to, like, because the squad's so young, there's something to, like, cheer for. Do you know what I mean? There's, like, right, these players are not Socrates on £100,000 a week that we paid £15 million for at 30. These are, like, young players you can get behind and you're going to develop them. So it's just, I don't know, despite what you see online, the atmosphere inside the stadium has been very good.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
I don't see the point in changing now either. Like, the problems of your squad have been created by having different managing directors, sporting directors, head of recruitments, like that whole Sven Mislintat era, Unai Emery's players, like very few of them remain at the club. Like
you just brown paper bag era.
Right, exactly. Vinay's, is Vinay still there? Anyway, I can't remember. Yeah. But there's just been a lot of chaos at boardroom level in the dugout. You just need to back a manager for a bit longer. I know Arteta's coming up to 2 years in the job, but come on, a bit longer is my opinion. Right, Pat, let's move on to another question because we've done Arteta in great detail. It's the sort of the final question of the show, and I know we've touched on potential strikers, but what is the one signing you'd love to bring into the club? Not necessarily a player, but what is the position that you think you know Arsenal most needs right now?
Well, it will be a striker. I mean, it'll be a striker or a central midfielder. Those are the remaining weak spots in the squad. And I think George is absolutely right. Like, if you can just target any striker, the guy you want is Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Like, he's the right age, that physical ability, pace,
mentality as
hard
well.
Work, like, gives you a totally different dimension in attack. Like, when City were kind of looking at Kane this summer, I did just sort of think, you should really consider Calvert-Lewin. They've got so many good crosses there, and he would just make them a different proposition. And if you are talking about kind of 90 million euros for Isak, then I think, like, you know, if you can get Calvert-Lewin for under 90 million pounds, I think you probably want to consider doing it. Because, like, you don't, it's not so much about how much you spend, but that you get value for the money you spend. So he'd be interesting. I mean, Ollie Watkins, I suppose, could be an alternative, but I don't think he'd cost a great deal less, and he's quite injury prone. But he'd also be a sort of similar age profile. He's a bit more versatile. But yeah, that sort of thing. I mean, other than that, I would just like a really dynamic, physical midfielder. Like, I really like Lokonga, but Lokonga's a passer and he is a passenger in defence. Like, I was so excited, even though I thought there were actually really good reasons to keep Granit Xhaka this summer. I was so excited for the two weeks I thought that was going to leave. I couldn't wait.
The sweet sense of relief was like, it was almost palpable. It was like so big. I was like, it was on the tip of my tongue. Like, I never have to see this guy play football.
I know. He's going to go to Roma as well. I don't even have to watch him.
He's not a bad footballer at all. He's just not a bad footballer. But I just, 5 years, I can't do it anymore. I just wanted to see this one season, I just wanted to see a new midfield partnership. That's all I wanted to see.
Yeah,
and it was cruelly taken away from me by an offer from Roma, which was about 12p and some tagliatelle or something. And I was
though that would like to see him play under a manager who uses that role, like Conte, like Thomas Tuchel, because we are now living in a world where there are people genuinely claiming that Jorginho is a worthy winner of, like, the best player in the world.
Oh, that's the worst of all the takes on Twitter at the moment.
I know, and Jorginho is literally Granit Xhaka. That is who he is. He's Granit Xhaka with slightly better decision making. Like, he doesn't get sent off as much, but that's partially as well because he plays with Kovacic and Conte, who do all the running for him. Like, I do not understand why people think this guy is amazing, and I would sort of love to see Xhaka play under a manager who would, like, you know, cover for all his inadequacies and make him look like a good player, like they did at Borussia Mönchengladbach. On the other hand, I don't want that to happen in matches that I have to watch. You know, like, I'd rather he retired from club football and only played for Switzerland.
I have nothing against him as a footballer because he is a perfectly fine footballer. Like,
particularly his passing.
But he is so stupid.
It's just, I don't even know if anyone else has, in any other club in this world, has got this, like, sort of problem where you're just bored of watching it. You're just so bored because you know exactly what's going to happen across the season. Yeah. It's the same cycle every year. He looks good. Wow, this is a new corner. Maybe he's actually matured. And he does something stupid, like try and choke slam a Burnley defender or 2 foot of some Man City bloke. And then you're just like, why? Why is he still here? I know why he's here, because obviously he looks like Hullet in training and he's got the best mentality in the world. Or give him the keys to the house. I don't know. And then it's just like, oh, so bored. Boring.
But even the passing, everyone's like, he's a great passer, and he is a great passer. But when he's not playing amazing passes, he will play mental, like suicidal passes just across the centre of the pitch, which always get cut out because it's incredibly easy to predict what Granit Xhaka is about to do, because it's like watching a fucking ocean liner like throw itself into reverse. Like it's so annoying. Like I just don't understand. It's one of those things. Like
I do not hate him.
I don't know. Like I hate watching him though, and yeah. and also it's like with central midfield more than any other position. You can be a really, really good player by just being 7 out of 10 every week. But the thing you can't do in central midfield is give like a 2 out of 10. You can't do it. Like, even if you're producing 10s and 9s the rest of the time, like, those 4 out of 10, you will lose your team the game. It's not like you're not like a winger or even a fullback. Like, if you have a game that bad, you will lose your side the game. And Granit Xhaka has those games so regularly that it doesn't matter how often he's, you know, sometimes he's even an 8, but it does not matter because he will have so many games in a season that are 4s and under that he just costs you points. Like against Burnley last season, he cost us like 4
when he wasn't
points.
Looking. Yeah.
He cost us 4 points or 5 points, whatever it was. Like just by being an idiot, and you just think all you have to do is engage your brain. And it does worry me that I suppose we don't have that many stupid players left, but he and Nicolas Pepe are two players who have literally nothing like between their ears. Like I like Nicolas Pepe a lot more than I like Granit Xhaka, but there is nothing between his ears. Like he will just do stupid things again and again and again. And is he as stupid as Granit Xhaka? No, no one's as stupid as Granit Xhaka. But I am so sick of just seeing people do dumb shit, because that is the stuff where, like, under Wenger, I was like, you know what? After under Wenger, like, we had Mustafi and like Kolasinac and people, but like people would do dumb shit far less often. And that's what I like about the Hay Lane kids. I just see people who actually have brains attached to their legs. and it's such a relief. Just to when Saka gets the ball, I'm like, you know what Saka's not gonna do? He's not just going to, like, go up and, like, I don't know, stab the referee or, like, I don't know, tell our fans to fuck off. Like, I just don't know.
It was because I was like, right, the replacement, like, as long as he's gone, the replacement doesn't even have to be, like, the best player in the world. It could be, like, I like Ruben Neves. He would have been fine. Just someone there to just recycle the ball. Like, 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10 every week. That's fine with me. I just don't want. I don't want to play like
you don't want the calamities
with Granit Xhaka.
Yeah,
like every week. But hopefully, you know, the Norwich game, when we were chasing the goal, we kind of switched to the 4-3-3 that Mikel, as previously said, he wants to play with Partey as a 6 and Ødegaard and Smith Rowe in front of him. I don't think this is. You can't go into every week like that because we will get absolutely battered.
But
hopefully, like, you know, against lower teams, we don't need to see Granit Xhaka. And maybe by the end of the season, he might go anyway. Even though he signed that, we triggered that option all year. Maybe, hopefully, this would be the last season. But I've got a feeling that he's just going to be here for the rest of time.
Yeah.
And he'll probably get the next manager sacked as well. Is my feeling.
Feels inevitable. I mean, yeah, I think you were so close to getting rid of him. I think Roma then didn't have enough money because they had to sign that replacement for Spinazzola.
They did have enough money. They just didn't want to spend it on Granit Xhaka, which isn't surprising.
I'm pretty sure. I thought Fabrizio Romano said they had to sign Matias Vigne, the left back from Palmeiras, to cover for Spinazzola. So they could only offer 10 million and you guys wanted 15 or something.
But after that, they went and got Tammy Abraham.
And then they signed some random bloke that I've never heard of before in my life from Serie A. He scored about one goal.
Shomurodov.
I was like, they just don't rate him. They just don't rate him.
It was a bit of a shame because he was liking Jose Mourinho's Instagram posts and he started Mourinho following him and everything.
They are made for each other. They're just like,
I think he would have been good in Serie A, to be fair, Xhaka. There's so much more space. He wouldn't be pressed in the same way. He's just got awful peripheral vision when he's facing his own goal. And it's just sloppy. There's no other way to say it.
George is totally right. Like, there's actually nothing wrong with him as a footballer. Like, he's slow, but like, there's nothing wrong with him. Like, his actual technical and even physical abilities. Like, he's a big, strong guy as well, and he's got good stamina, and he's got incredible fitness. I'll give him that. But he is just a moron. Like, he is an idiot. Like, that is the problem. He has no brain whatsoever, and it's just like, and when you're watching him, you're just like, I don't know. It's like you're rolling dice every like 5 seconds, and like, you know, if you get anything except for a 12, he'll continue to behave like a human being. But if you get a 12, like, it's going to trigger the nuclear bomb, and he's just going to run over and like take someone's leg off. Like, just don't understand the man. Like, well, I just feel like if you talk to him, it would be insane. Like, I cannot get a handle on how he exists.
Personality wise, they all love him, don't they?
Who cares, man?
You know what the thing is? If he wasn't a regular and wasn't a first-name team shit, I think I'd actually like him more because he is so mental. I think it'd be endearing. But 5 years of it as an undisputed starter is like starting to like erode my brain slightly. Like, so, but you know, two more games without him, you know,
fair.
That's a positive.
Yeah, that is a positive.
And he's back for an North London derby, so you know. But you wait for that.
But look, there are definite benefits to having a bunch of like big nasty in your side. Like, there was a point when we had him and we had Kolasinac and Guendouzi was like being an absolute and I was kind of like, I love this. Like, all these people are horrible people to play against, and that is kind of nice. But what Xhaka doesn't do is force opponents to make stupid decisions or get themselves sent off. He just gets himself sent off.
Yeah, he's the one who reacts more than them.
Exactly. He's like an instigator, but he is also like the object of the instigation. So like, Granit Xhaka...
He's instigating himself against himself.
Basically. Yeah, he's like, you know the way people talk on Twitter about people making somebody up to get mad at? That is what Granit Xhaka does every 25 minutes in a football match. He's just like, he reacts to everything like Zidane in the World Cup final. And it's just, it's honestly just wearing Doogie. Like, I mean, you should just take him at Sunderland.
Well, he wouldn't get on our team at the moment. We're top of League One, man. We are we're absolutely flying. And
I forgot what we was talking about, to be honest. It went into like a Granit Xhaka.
I think I asked you.
It's because I got like PTSD about Granit Xhaka, man.
I can't even remember what I asked you. Maybe where you'd improve the side and we went to central midfield.
Yeah, who would you sign, Georgios?
So the Athletic said that our next summer's window is definitely going to be targeting a central midfielder and a striker.
Really good, yeah. Thank God.
And I don't think we're ready for the 4-3-3 single pivot yet. It'll be a couple of years till I think everyone's like acquainted and Ødegaard and Smith Rowe develop a bit more, and they're a bit more in tune with the defensive side of the game to play in that system, like in the De Bruyne role and the Foden role or the Grealish role, whatever. So I think Bruno Guimarães. I think if we sold Xhaka, I reckon it probably would have been him or Ruben Neves, which would have been nice. But at the minute, I don't really trust midfielders coming out from Lyon because they all seem to go to pot as soon as they leave. Or in our case, he didn't even leave, and I don't know what's happened to him. They were in seventh for like 10 mil or something by the end of the window. They was desperate. But with the way the squad's going, a nice partner for Partey with Lokonga as backup would be really nice. Like, I don't think you could ask more than that, really.
There we have it.
And then a striker, I think, is necessary as well, because obviously you'll have Aubameyang in his last year of deal, where he'd be 33. Balogun's clearly... He'll play minutes a season, but he's not ready. Eddie's in the last year of his deal, so if he moves to an English side, we'll get, like, a tribunal for him. But apart from that, if he goes to a foreign side, we won't get anything. So I don't know, really. It's just... I don't know who we can target in midfield, because we don't know what we'll... be looking at what our playing style will be like by the end of the season, because we've got our Partey light in kind of Lokonga, who's a more of a passer of the ball. He's very good at driving the ball forward, but in terms of a player next to him, we don't really know what Arteta really wants. I guess it'll be someone a bit more senior, which is why I think Ruben Neves made a lot of sense, because even though he's only 2 years older than Guendouzi, he's like a man, do you know what I mean? Like, very man, like he looks like he's about 30, but he's actually 24. And he's already captained Porto at 18. I think he would have been a good fit, not in terms of playing ability, but in terms of mentality, what he'd bring to the side in terms of seniority as well. I think that's quite evident that we're targeting personality a lot more as well than just ability. Because I think if we wanted pure raw ability, we probably would have went for Aouar instead of Ødegaard. But Ødegaard, obviously captain Norway, been playing senior football since he was 16. And, you know, he's vocal on the pitch. And you look throughout the squad now, you should see, hopefully, Partey stuff, because I think Mikel was saying that he wants Partey to be the boss of midfield. Like, he needs to step up in terms of that. Obviously, that'll come with playing time because he's barely played for us. But yeah, I think it just needs to be right, a mixture of talent and personality over the next few summers, just to get this squad into the direction you want, because we've had too many people coasting through their career at Arsenal in the last few years. I mean, Sokratis had that sort of Greek mentality, but as soon as his legs went and he had like two stumps of feet whenever he played the ball, that went out the window very quickly. Klasnac, a fighter, but not in the right way. Ozil was a bit gritty, but still a bit of a walkover, and he was coasting. Guendouzi was very immature. I rate Guendouzi as a player, but I don't think he's a big miss, to be honest. So it's just about the target and the personality, and that's why I come to like the Rams I'm signing, because you can see he's a bit wacky. You can see he can develop into like a player who, you know, he's not going to take any shit. Like, if he was playing against Brentford, against Pontus Janssen, he would be shoving him all over the place. He wouldn't be caught in the arm. But, you know, I think it's important. Like, even though we have probably our worst ever start, surprisingly, I'm still quite optimistic for the future, even though I don't think optimism doesn't mean winning a league or even finishing Champions League next 2 years. It's just about the squad we're building, having players who are pretty likeable, we can get behind, and just recruiting right, really. I'm not really fussed about how much a player costs as long as they think he's right. And I think with Ben White, I was definitely an overpay, but I really like the player. I liked him since he was at Leeds. And I just think, you know what? If it comes to it, just pay it.
Fair. Okay, I've been your therapist today, guys. We've covered literally everything, I think, with the current Arsenal team, whether they'd keep Arteta, their dislike of Granit Xhaka, or their frustrations with Granit Xhaka was quite a long segment. What they think of the new signings.
It was like going to like a therapy session.
Yeah, you guys were on those horizontal sofas. Exactly.
No, I dislike him now. I just can't stand it.
And what you guys make of your new signings, your problems in your side, you know, Aubameyang we've covered, Lokonga, Tomiyasu. I think this has been the sort of most thorough Arsenal podcast we've probably ever done. There might have been some bleeping in there as well, so I do apologise for that. I hope you got the main gist of what was said in that Xhaka section in particular. But guys, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for contributing, Pato and George. Yes, George?
Where do you think we'll finish as a prediction?
Predicted you'd finish, I think I said 7th at the start of the season, and I'm going to stick with 7th. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was 5th. I would be very surprised if it was lower than 8th. But that's the region.
I think 5th to 7th is like probably the realistic target.
Fair.
I reckon it'll be, to be fair, it depends on the points really, because I reckon it might be a bit close like it was last year in terms of like just being 2 points away from Europa League football or Conference League football.
Okay, so you're going 5th to 7th. I'm going 7th. Pat, what do you reckon just before we wrap up?
I'll be optimistic and say 6th. But honestly, I just want us to score more goals.
Yeah.
Like, I think George is right. I think points will be tight, and like one thing either way could make the difference. But I would just like us to score a decent number of goals for the first time in a while.
Love it. There we have it, guys. That's been the Arsenal sort of how to fix general situation, the therapy session. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Pat, what should they go and watch or listen to now if they've enjoyed this?
I did a bit of a dive on and explained about West Ham, which I did find genuinely quite interesting because I wasn't quite sure why they are so good, but they are. So you can go and check that out. I think it was an FD Explained.
Lovely. George, what have you been editing recently?
Well, I'm editing everything, really, but I think you should check out Snapchat. Zach, nice. Joe, Sam, all on Snapchat, Chris sometimes. Just type in Football Daily. We'll come up, Transfer Talk as well. And just catch us on there.
Perfect. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Please leave us a review, etc. Remember to subscribe to Football Daily Podcast if you're watching on YouTube. And leave us some comments about what you'd like to see us cover next time on Extra Time Podcast. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks, guys. Bye. Bye.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.